For someone known as the architect or boy genius for his management of President Bush's campaign, Karl Rove's handling of the 2006 midterm elections could prove to be his own and his party's undoing. Our third story in the countdown, a new report that earlier this year, Mr. Rove actually strong-armed Congressman Mark Foley into running for re-election when the Florida Republican had been prepared to just walk away. The New Republic, quoting a friend of Foley's, who says that as early this year, Foley had all but decided to retire from the House to work as a lobbyist in Washington before Mr. Rove intervened. The White House and Rove gang apparently telling Mr. Foley that if he did not run for re-election, it might impact his career as a lobbyist. Well, that worked out well for the Republican Party. The White House standing by the beleaguered House Speaker, not just President Bush, but also his press secretary, Tony Snow, scheduled to stump for Dennis Hastert at a fundraiser on Saturday. Mr. Snow's campaign calendar, in fact, chock full of speeches, fundraisers, other political events in the final weeks before the election, your tax dollars in action. The GOP's fortunes and those of Mr. Rove likely to sink even further next week with the release of Tempting Faith to bookstores besides the one we bought it at. All in all, the kind of political climate that might cause even a GOP moderate to become desperate and, say, drag Chappaquiddick into the Republican sex scandal. Congressman Chris Shays of Connecticut lashing out after Democratic Senator Ted Kennedy made a campaign appearance for Mr. Shays' opponent last week, quoting the congressman from the Hartford Courant newspaper, "I know the speaker didn't go over a bridge and leave a young person in the water and then have a press conference the next day. Dennis Hastert didn't kill anybody." Have we mentioned the election's only 26 days from now? For more on the mindset of the Republican Party, as well as the measures it's taken recently, time now to call upon our own Howard Fineman, chief political correspondent for Newsweek magazine. Good evening, Howard.
Hi, Keith.
We'll start with the Republican sex scandal, and this is comparatively trivial in it, but Chris Shays invokes Chappaquiddick, the token reasonable Republican. I mean, what do we look for next from him? Spontaneous human combustion?
Well, I think it's a great campaign slogan. Our guy didn't kill anybody. You know, talk about lowering expectations, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's fascinating because Chris Shays has always prospered in Connecticut by being a moderate, by being a guy who got a lot of Democratic votes, by being a guy who was hard to pigeonhole, by being a guy who never read from the Republican talking points, especially not from the conservative talk radio talking points. And that's what he was doing here. This has been all over talk radio the last couple of days. You know, what about Teddy Kennedy? What about Gary Studs? You know, what about you name it? And they've been using the Kennedy name, and you've been hearing lots of sort of water and gurgling on conservative talk radio. I was astonished that Shays felt himself embattled enough in Connecticut to do that.
Yeah, the shelf life on that, it's the story's age is now 37 years old.
Yeah.
It's beginning to wane, I think. But all right, to the pertinent part of this, let's bring up something from the Civil War. To the revelations about Karl Rove and the arm twisting, does this provide a possible motive for why the GOP congressional leadership appears to have been so willing to look the other way when it came to Mark Foley and the conduct with the pages, even as the evidence was piling up? Did the White House really want him to stay in the House?
Yeah, I think that's part of the myopia here, maybe the deliberate myopia. They didn't want to know because Foley was popular in Florida, popular in that district, an excellent fundraiser, as he proved by turning over hundreds of thousands of dollars from his PAC to the Republican Congressional Campaign Committee to sort of, you know, buy his continued membership in the Insiders Club of the Republicans on the Hill. You know, as a matter of fact, Foley told me a number of months back that there was a point at which the White House, meaning Rove, was trying to entice him into the Senate race down there to take on Bill Nelson in the Senate race. So Karl Rove and the Republicans, you know, weren't as interested in whatever possible downside he might have than the fact that they viewed him as a member of the club and a good fundraiser.
All right, besides the Foley scandal, what's on deck, obviously, the David Kuo book and the charges made in Tempting Faith that Mr. Rove was using the Christian right. With a quote like, you know, just get me a effing faith-based thing attributed to Karl Rove, is that going to resonate either within the political end of the religious right movement or within Washington generally?
Well, I think among evangelical, Bible-believing Christian political activists, the kind of people I was talking to the other week at this Washington meeting of the Focus on the Family political group, that's Dr. James Dobson's group, a lot of those people at the grassroots who came here and that I talked to were very, very skeptical about this White House now. Yes, they were happy about the Supreme Court nominations of Alito and Roberts, but beyond that, they felt they'd been led along by the nose, that they hadn't been given all of the programs that they had wanted, that they were beginning to feel like they had been used, That was before this book came out, and I can tell you that a lot of those same people that I talked to the other week are going to look at this new book and say, aha, this is what we thought all along. They're not all going to suddenly start voting Democrat, Keith, mm-hmm. but they may stay home, they may not volunteer as much, they might not drive the vans, they might not work the phones, because now they look at what looks in this book to be a very, very cynical Republican White House.
And there's one more thing on deck, and maybe this is going to be the biggest of them all. The head of the British Army has tonight called for British troops to be withdrawn from Iraq almost immediately, quoting him in the newspapers there in the morning, "We must quit Iraq soon." Are the wheels off for good of the Republican and presidential bus if the British military actually announces plans or even talks about withdrawing from Iraq?
Well, actually, I thought the key was when Kazakhstan left the coalition on the willing. But no, if Britain goes and if they're no longer willing, you know, that's the canary in the coal mine. That's the signal that we have. The United States has no support whatsoever in the world. The British were our last mainstay there, and I think that's very important because British politics and American politics have sort of become one, and that's a bad vote from the British Army.
We're going to go into depth on that one tomorrow. Newsweek's Howard Fineman, as always, sir, our great thanks.
Thank you, Keith.